Hello and a warm welcome to the Sweet Spot, your go-to golf tipping show brought to you by The Racing Post. It's Jack Reeve and it's Steve Palmer to look back on two tournaments. It was the Dubai Desert Classic and the American Express. Two more to look forward to this week. We've got the Farmers Insurance Open and the Ras Al Khaimah Championship. Steve Palmer, plenty of viewers waiting at home for an update on your knickers. Are they in a twist?
Blimey. I think Rory McIlroy tore my knickers to shreds last week, Jack. Yeah, Rory had a negative effect on me. My knickers are not in a good state, to be honest with you. I lasted to the end of January, almost to the end of January, and then they've been... my knickers have capitulated.
Disappointed. Your New Year resolution of wet January been, kept in good stead?
Oh, I've maintained that one very well. Yeah. Tommy Tiger and I were alone for the weekend. So we spent a lot of time in the snooker hall at the weekend. And wet January was going well. Because the football was cancelled, Jay, you see. I had intended to go to Weymouth versus St Albans, but frozen pitch, they said. Which I think was a scandalous decision because the sun was shining. They called it off really ridiculously early, if you ask me. Impatience, Jack. Impatience. Too much impatience.
Have they not got, frost covers at Weymouth?
I don't know what went on, but it was called off ludicrously early in my eyes. So that left us with no choice but to spend all day in the snooker parlour. And we had a lovely time. But the golf was not as good as me and Tommy's adventures. Because Rory McIlroy, as we were discussing last week, it was a tough call, wasn't it, to take Burlington Bertie or go for the bigger prices about Nicola Hoggar. And obviously, I regret my decision in the end.
Let's talk about it. And maybe we'll get onto your exploits in the snooker hall later on in the show. Dubai Desert Classic, Rory McIlroy, two things that go very well together. That's the fourth time he's won this event. He is just inevitable, isn't he, in the sort of in the Arab Emirates, Steve? He was so far back and you thought, there's never a chance. I think he was 10 back coming into the Saturday morning and just got it done. And, when Rory's firing, he is absolutely joyous to watch.
Yeah, it's not like we weren't warned, is it? As you say, four wins at the Emirates. Every time you go to Dubai, he's a threat. The Dubai Invitational was quickly forgotten, wasn't it? He put all those mistakes down to Christmas rust. I mean, 10 shots behind at the halfway stage. So, yeah, I'm not going to beat myself up too much about not taking Burlington Bertie, but by the halfway stage, I think he drifted out to 50 on the exchanges by all accounts. So, but then it's mad, isn't it? By the turn on Sunday, he's in total control of the tournament. So 10 shots behind after round two, halfway through the final round in total control, and then made hard work of it from there, didn't he? I mean, that back nine was not that pretty. He was one over par for the back nine, which is the scoring nine traditionally. Did enough to get the job done. I mean, Nicolai Hoggar, I'm trying not to beat myself up too much. I'm trying to put a fresh pair of knickers on and go again because Nicolai Hoggar, 22-1. Was that a better bet than McIlroy 100-30? Nicolai Hoggar putted abysmally last week. He hit it well enough. He hit the ball well enough to win the tournament comfortably. Three putts all over the place. The three putts on Sunday were absolutely disgusting. I don't know if you were watching on Sunday. The three putt on 16, he just smashed the first putt way past. And we've discussed this before, haven't we, about punters sometimes care more than the players, don't they? You were discussing this. You were getting angry about it last week. I'm going to get angry about that because I think this is the case. When Nicolai Hoggar was handed the putter on the 16th hole on Sunday, he did not care about the one back. It was just carefree, launched it towards the hole. And for him, like third place, fourth place, seventh place, it really doesn't matter to him. If once his winning chance was gone, he lost interest. Whereas for a punter, the difference between fourth place and seventh place can be immense, can't it? So, frustrating golf tournament for sure.
And in terms of, that we talk about frustration, seeing three putts, not only as a player, it's the most, gut-punching of them all, but as a punter particularly, when you've got no control over proceedings and you're sat at home, just desperately, it could be a shot difference between place money and not. It's incredibly disappointing.
It is, and a lot of the time you're following on your app, aren't you? Because the Sky camera directors obviously focusing on who's going to win the tournament. But for punters, the battle for eighth place is important. And you're often looking at the app to follow what's going on there, which makes life a bit difficult. And Richard Mansell as well. We had high hopes for him early on, didn't we? Yeah, but Richard Mansell at big prices started off so well and just got progressively worse. Every round was progressively worse than the previous one, faded out of it. And then on Sunday, I thought we had big chances in the Amex for place money. We had three players that could have got place money. I was on 50 odds first 10 against. I thought JT Poston, Eric Cole, Sung Jae Im. What? Yeah, at least one of them is going to get a top 10. JT Poston finished 11th to miss out by a shot. So yeah, just frustration and a huge test of the knickers. And I'll be honest with you that they did not come through unscathed.
You're doing my job for me, Steve. You're transitioning from tournament to tournament beautifully well. We could talk about the American Express sooner than I had planned. It was a historic tournament in the end in terms of our winner. It was won by Nicholas Dunlap, the first amateur to win on the PGA Tour since Mickelson in 1991. Yeah. He shot 60 on the Saturday. We were on 59 watch to take command. He misses out on $1.5 million pay packet because he is still an amateur. Punting aside, remarkable and a new name on the block to really look forward to here.
Yeah, I think he was a general 300-1 with the bookmakers, but you could get 1,000 on the exchanges. The maximum price on the exchanges. Phil Mickelson did it in the Hawaiian Open, I believe, in 1991. I guess that was early in the season as well. So it seems like early in the season, these amateurs can come on when the pros are not, warmed up, I guess. Remarkable achievement. Clearly got huge potential. He won the US Junior and the US Amateur. And there's only one player that has achieved that previously, and that's Tiger Woods. So when you start matching records set by Tiger Woods, then you go in places. And he's gone off to decide whether to turn pro now, and he's withdrawn from the Farmers. He had an invite to the Farmers this week, Farmers Insurance Open, which we'll get to. He's withdrawn, so I think he's just gone away to sort of let the dust settle and decide whether to turn pro, because as you say, he's missed out on a check for $1.5 million last week because he was an amateur. Christian Bazidenhout was obviously delighted with that because he got the full pot for finishing runner up. I think he should turn pro. I don't know.
What are the reasons for remaining amateur? Because
it's very noble reasons, isn't it? Because he was saying it doesn't just affect me. He's got his teammates to consider and his college teammates at University of Alabama, I believe, is where he goes, isn't it?
Take the money of Liv. He still gets to play with teammates, and then you get the best of both worlds.
Well, yeah. You have said the L word there, haven't you? Maybe he's withdrawn for the Farmers to go and have a little chat with all the all the Saudis and see what's coming up. They'd probably be John Rahm's teammate by the end of next week, wouldn't he? I mean, that'd break the heart of a lot of people, wouldn't it?
It would. Sam Burns. It was weird, wasn't it? Because after Dunlap 60 on the Saturday, you thought, oh, he's in a commanding position, and then it suddenly swings, and you think, oh, Sam Burns is going to go on and win this. And was it the 17th he found water, didn't he? And I don't know about Sam Burns. There's something about him that just, I struggle to get behind.
Well, Scott Dunlap, sorry, I called him Scott Dunlap. There was an old player showing me age there. Nick Dunlap, there's no relation to the Dunlaps, by the way. Nick Dunlap, if you said to him before he teed off on Sunday that you're going to card a 70, he would assume that he didn't win the golf tournament, because the quality of the chasing pack, and they were close enough, but it was lackluster, wasn't it? Justin Thomas took too long to get going, and then Sam Burns produced that remarkably poor finish. I thought Burns was the bet going into Sunday. I tipped him on the website at 9-4. I thought that was a great price with only an amateur in front. And then he got two shots ahead. I was on good terms with myself again. Burns was 3-1 on for victory. I thought, at least the weekend's going to end on some sort of high. But it was back-to-back double bogeys. He double bogeyed 17, double bogeyed 18. For a player of that experience and... Yeah, I was really disappointed with what Burns did there. But obviously it launches the career of Dunlap. The PGA Tour has been a minefield for punters this year. You know what I mean?
Big price winners, yeah.
Chris Kirk, Grayson Murray, Nick Dunlap. I mean, all massive prices. Let's hope the Lord has got something more sensible in store this week.
Did Dunlap have any sort of alcohol-related issues that we know about? Because we were on for the treble of reformed alcoholics, aren't we?
Well, he's at university, and I saw I did see videos of the university. His university pals all going bananas at the win. So, I mean, he probably, I wouldn't like to say it. I don't want to get him in trouble. I expect he's had some alcohol, but yeah, you've got to be 21. I think he's grown up a little bit more sheltered than your average, because he was homeschooled. He's homeschooled. He was homeschooled before he went to college. That sort of protects you a little bit. I mean, it's quite interesting. It made me think about Xander Lombard, because I've never been a fan of Xander Lombard, because did you know he was homeschooled in South Africa?
And I didn't know that.
And I've always had him down as a bit wimpy because of that. I don't want to be harsh on any viewers that were homeschooled, but I think that schooling environment, you weren't homeschooled, yeah.
I wasn't. I'm really glad I wasn't either. Yeah.
Very awkward moment for me now. But I think you need to go in that school environment to toughen yourself up and be exposed to the rough and tumble of the world a little bit. And I think if you're homeschooled, it can make you a little bit brittle. And I've put a lot of Xander Lombard's mental failures down to that fact. I'm not a fan of Xander Lombard's upbringing.
But does that change now then? Well, does your whole theory get blown up because we've got, you know, a history maker who was homeschooled?
This is what I'm concerned about. Has my theory blown up there? Possibly, but he did only shoot 70 in the final round and, you know, should have been destroyed by one of those players behind him. But maybe my theory's, maybe that's another theory that I can tear up.
What were you doing at 20 years old, Steve?
Oh gosh, I can't honestly remember. I would have been at Bournemouth University there, wouldn't I? Bournemouth University. But I mean, this Nick Dunlap fella at 12 years old carded a 59.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, on a proper golf course. So like, yeah, he's not cut from the same cloth as the rest of us. Very mature for his age as well. You know, very well spoken in his media conference after. Did you see it? Apparently, to balance out the homeschooling, his dad sent him to the golf course to play with older fellas. He says he's learnt a lot from playing with older, better players from a very young age. So when he's 12 year old, he's playing with sort of experienced, you know, scratch golfers, I guess. You know, he's clearly an old head on his young shoulders, despite the homeschooling. So, yeah, I'll forget about the homeschooling.
Good luck to him. Let's get on to this week's tournament, shall we? We'll start with the Farmers Insurance Open. We've got the Ras Al Khaimah Championship to preview after this. Torrey Pines, Steve, across two courses, isn't it? North and South. It starts on Wednesday. So that's a public service announcement to our viewers, to our watchers.
Wednesday start klaxon. You need a klaxon for that, don't you? The Wednesday start klaxon. Have you got one?
Haven't got any laying around.
Got one to hand. Okay.
No. You can make the sound of a klaxon. Yeah, go on.
I just tried and failed. No. So it's on Wednesday, finishes Saturday. So that's why we're previewing this one first. Chronological order fans like me are obliged to talk about this one first. And the reason is because the gridiron is taking centre stage on Sunday. I think since 2021, the Farmers have started on a Wednesday, finished on a Saturday because the PGA Tour chiefs want everyone to be watching. And on Sunday, Gridiron takes over. I don't know whether you're a Gridiron fan, Jack. I guess the Chicago Bears are playing the Miami Dolphins or something. You got no idea?
I really want to get into kind of those American sports, and I feel like there's so much sport anyway, my brain doesn't have any capacity. I'd have to lose one to gain one.
That's, you know, absolutely right.
No
more room at the inn. I totally agree with that. I only got into Gridiron when I was 10 years old, and I had a Chicago Bears school bag that I took to school, and that sort of helped me in Australia when I was getting bullied in Australia. The one thing that impressed my bullies was I had a Chicago Bears school bag. So that sort of saved me.
Did you pick that based on what the bullies liked?
No. I just got lucky there. So yeah, I'm a huge Chicago Bears fan, but I couldn't tell you any of their results from the last 35 years. But that is why we're starting on a Wednesday. So we haven't got long. 4:50 p.m. on Wednesday this starts, UK time.
We best rattle through it then, Steve, because people are waiting at home. Let's talk through
We haven't got long. So I just keep telling everyone, we haven't got long. You've probably
Jan
missed.
Jan Schauffele, your favourite, 9-1. Patrick Cantlay, 10s. Max Homer, 11-1, alongside Colin Morikawa. Steve Palmer's favourite, Ludvig Åberg, 18-1. Sung Jae-im, 22s. Bigger the rest. Steve, Farmers Insurance Open. How many tips?
Well, we haven't got long, and it's Torrey Pines. Oh, sorry. Four.
Go on, give it some.
Nah, blah. The throat might go. The throat might go.
Okay.
It's been a lot going on that throat. Four.
Okay. Who's the headline pick?
Well, would you like some course credentials?
Have we not already talked through that? We can.
I don't think so.
Sorry. Oh, you were talking about your bag, weren't you? Of course.
Yes, I've had a senior moment, as my mum likes to say.
Go on then, talk us through the courses.
Torrey Pines South and North, La Jolla, San Diego, California. There is one round at each course over the first 2 days, and the final two rounds are at the South course. The South is 7,765 yards. The North is 7,258 yards, both par 72s. The South is a US Open venue. The 2008 US Open, in my opinion, the greatest major ever, was staged there. Tiger Woods won that with a broken leg, of course. Then John Rahm won the 2021 US Open there. The South, traditionally at least two shots harder than the North. The South is a big boys course, Jack. Power, significant asset there. Look at the honors board. Tiger Woods about a million times. Phil Mickelson, John Daly, Davis Love, Bubba Watson, John Rahm. I could go on and on. Strong ball striking, the key to success. We've got calm weather throughout this. Cloudy start, sunnier for the final 36. 156 runners going to post.
Yeah, love the sound of this. Really looking forward to it. Steve, who's the headline pick?
Max Homer, 12-1. We had him last year for this. He did us proud. He's improved since then. I can't abandon Max Homer. His record in California is incredible. He comes alive in his home state. Four of his six PGA Tour titles have come in California. Since winning this in fine style 12 months ago, he's gone on to make an excellent Ryder Cup debut. So impressive to win 3.5 points in an away Ryder Cup, you know, on a team that was absolutely thrashed. He's then gone to the Nedbank Challenge in South Africa and won his first overseas event in November. You know, further evidence of what a polished performer Homer has become. He's not finished outside the top 14 in his last 9 tournaments. His only appearance this year, so consistent now, such a good all-rounder. His only appearance this year was 14th place in the century, 4 rounds in the 60s on a par 73 golf course. He fired the longest drive in PGA Tour history at the century. Just a little tidbit for you there. 477-yard drive at the century. Yeah, I talk about power being essential on this course. He's not a short hitter anymore, Homer. He's getting longer and longer and longer, and he now holds that record. His last 5 appearances in regulation PGA Tour events in California have resulted in form figures of 10-1-1-2-7. Wow. He was ninth in the 2020 Farmers before winning last year. So yeah, we need to be on Max Homer again.
That's remarkable. I mean, you obviously know that Homer's one of the elite now, but I hadn't realized his recent record was just that good. That's remarkable for him.
Yeah, and magnificent in California. And don't forget, he's already successfully defended a PGA Tour title. He won back-to-back Fortinet championships in 2021 and 2022.
That's one of my huge joys in life, Steve, is going. I love the sort of history of tournaments. And when you go through the Wikipedia page and you see people have gone back to back, it's so satisfying. You love chronological order. I love back to back winners.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we've all got our fetishes, and you're absolutely you've got absolutely every right to do that behind closed doors.
We'll leave it at just that in terms of fetishes for this week, Steve. So Max Homer, the headline pick. 3 more to go. Who's next?
It's another 12-1 chance as things stand. Colin Morikawa. I know I'm asking a lot of punters here, but this is a top-heavy market. You've got 4 Californians dominating the betting for this event, haven't you? And I much prefer 2 of them to the other 2. I prefer Max Homer and Colin Morikawa to Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay. If I had to choose between Homer and Morikawa, which I was really wrestling with yesterday, should I just go with 1 or 2? I would go for Homer. That's why he's in my headline selection. But I don't want to make the same mistake I made last week, Jack. You know, it was a mistake last week. You know, it was a toss-up between McIlroy and Hoggar for that Dubai Desert Classic main money. You know, a 4-pronged attack would have paid off there. I want 4 prongs.
You can't beat yourself up, Steve. It was, you know, new week.
Well, I want 4 prongs. I want 4 prongs for the farmers, Jack. You know, the farmers need lots of prongs, don't they, for the harvest? You know, pitchforks and whatnot.
Wasn't British farmer slogan from farm to fork? It used to be that, didn't it?
Oh, there you go. There you go. Yeah. Well, if you're ever going to have lots of prongs for an event, it should be the farmers. And yeah, I know I'm asking a lot for punters. I mean, punters are after like massive prices. Chance the dual forecast. You know, two or three firms every week do dual forecasts. Yeah, the Homer Morikawa dual forecast will be a very exciting price when it gets issued. But I think these two are going to have it between them. Yeah, Morikawa finished 21st and third in his two previous Farmer starts. Third last year. He was fourth in the 2021 US Open at Torrey Pines South. He's dripping in California form like Homer. Morikawa's USPGA Championship victory was in his home state of California. And his confidence is right back now, isn't it? In the last few months, it's come right back. He lost a playoff for the Rocket Mortgage Classic in July. Then he was the fourth best scorer in the Tour Championship. Played well there. Then he won the Zozo by six shots. An emphatic Zozo victory. Seventh at the Hero World Challenge. Fifth at the Century. And he had a lot on his mind at the Century, Jack. He was deeply affected by the wildfires that devastated Hawaii in August last year. And when he got to the Century, I could see the way he was talking, in his behaviour, he was doing as much as he can to sort of raise money for charity. 100 people died in those wildfires, Jack. You might not know about them in Hawaii. So when he turned up at the Century, because he's got Hawaiian roots, you see, Morikawa. I think the restaurant that he used to have one of his family owned a restaurant got burnt down in these wildfires. The building that used to be his restaurant.
Really?
So he was focused on raising money for charity, and he also was carrying the demons from the previous Century where he threw it away and got pipped by John Rahm. So his head was all over the place. I think he was too keyed up, and he swung the club really well, as he has been doing, putted terribly because I think he was just a bit too antsy. He only lost by four shots. I think he'd be much more relaxed for the Farmers. Surefire title contender for me.
It's been the putting, if anything, that's let Morikawa down. I mean, ball striking is just an absolute joy to watch, isn't it?
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I was just going to say, his swing did go awry for a bit, though, but it's right back in the groove now. Sorry, Jack.
Yeah, no, great to watch. No, absolutely fine, Steve. Two more to go. Who's next?
Sepp Straka, 40 to 1 best now. He's gone up a level in terms of self-belief in the last 8 months, in my humble opinion. It started with seventh place in the USPGA. Then he won the John Deere Classic in July. Ryder Cup debut on a winning European team. He was part of that sensational 4-0 romp that Europe enjoyed in the opening session. Then he was runner-up to Scotty Scheffler in the Hero World Challenge last month. No, you're bullying me.
You tried to style that out so beautifully.
You're bullying a man with a speech impediment. It's not a good look. then he was 12th in the Century on his only appearance of 2024. So since turning 30 in May, I know you've sometimes felt I'm going to psycho babble, but I think turning 30 is quite a big one. You're not a kid anymore when you turn 30. This will come to you, Jet. 30 is a big one. Straka turned 30 in May, and he's looked
only
like
30.
Yeah. He's only 30, and he's become a serious golfer since then. He's a two-time PGA Tour champion now, and his maiden title came on a really tough course, Honda Classic. He's on a tough golf course this week where ball striking is the key, and he finished 13th on his Farmers debut in 2019. And he was ranked 445th in the world for that. So he showed an immediate liking for this course, despite being a nobody. And then he was 16th on his last Farmers appearance. So, yeah, I think Straka's a certainty to get in the mix. And I got icing on the cake. You can do the noises because my throat's not up to it. Give me an icing on the cake.
You can have your sip of water and then do the icing. If your theory is that sort of homeschool kids are slightly wimpy, mine's that sports people, doesn't have to just be golfers, but athletes, always look older than they actually are. Because you think like 20-year-old footballers, they've got sort of kids all over the place, and they're tattooed up. They look so much older. I thought Sepp Straka was closing in on 40.
Well, he's a big burly boy, isn't he?
Yeah.
He grew up very early because he was born in Austria and then moved to Georgia at a young age and then thrown into the college environment. Yeah, he's had to grow up early doors. But very, 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 he's a very, very private man, Sepp. But I have managed to discover that, and this is the icing on the cake, he became a father at the end of last year. So he's got the nappy.
How did you find that out? Did you have to send that to the detectives?
Yeah, I've got my contacts. he became a father. So he's nappy factored up to the eyeballs. It's a son, which is always the one that seems to have more of an effect on players. I'm not being sexist there. It's just clinically proven that Leo Strack has entered the world.
So you he's a private person, but you know he's got a kid. You know the name, the gender. So you're clearly not that private, or you're just very good at what you do.
I'm well sourced. The phone never stops. I turn it off for sweet spot, but then it all just boom, 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 info, boom, boom, boom. And then a 300-to-1 shot that we had no chance of getting wins, and you think, what's the bloody point?
Three down, one to go. Who's last up here, Steve?
The last one is Luke List. Luke List, the last one on my list.
Luke Littler, then. That would have been a surprise.
Well, we'll discuss him. We'll discuss him later. I know we're not supposed to go on to other sports, but at the end, ask me about Luke Littler. Yeah, 66-to-1 Luke List is a big prize for me. He won this tournament in 2022 for his maiden PGA Tour title. He added a second victory in October last year in the Sanderson Farms. His putting, he's got more confidence in his putting now. He's always been a greens and regulation machine. He's 39 years of age now, but his putting's a little bit more consistent. Six of his last eight tournaments have yielded a top 25 finish. Ignore the Sony Open last time out. That course doesn't suit him. He was tailed off there. He's got a great record in California. Finished 10th in the 2021 Farmers before winning it 12 months later. 12th in 2018. So, Luke List, the pick of the outsiders.
Luke List. Okay, we'll recap on those selections at the end of the show. Let's move over to the DP World Tour. You mentioned the top of the market there, Steve, so we can bypass that for now. The Ras Al Khaimah Championship at Al Hamra Golf Club. Talk us through the setup.
Yes, Al Hamra, Ras Al Khaimah, United Arab Emirates, 7,410 yards, par 72, four par fives. We've got six pieces of course form to devour here. 2016 and 2017 Ras Al Khaimah Challenge on the Challenge Tour, the 2018 Challenge Tour Grand Final, the 2022 Ras Al Khaimah Classic, and the 2022 and 2023 Ras Al Khaimah Championship. Straightforward desert track, wide fairways, wild driving often goes unpunished. It's made for powerhouses to make merry. We've got calm weather for 3 days. Bit of breeze on Sunday afternoon, but scoring will be extremely low until then. A field of 1-3-2 going to post.
And I think most will remember this tournament, Steve. It was Gavin's, wasn't it, last year that won it? Yeah. Didn't he make a seven down the last? Or it was just and hold like a 50-footer to win it for a seven. It was remarkable.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, he sliced his drive into the water, then again into the water, and then needed a really long one to win the tournament by a shot. So, unbelievable scenes. Let's hope we get some more entertainment this week.
Exactly, Steve. Powerhouses go well here. Let's read out the top of the market. Rasmus Højgaard, your favourite, 12-to-1. Jordan Smith, 16s, alongside Thorbjørn Olesen, 16-to-1. Yannick Paul, 22-to-1, alongside Thriston the Piston Lawrence. The homeschool, Zamba Lombard, 22-to-1. Laurie Cantor, 28. Bigger the rest. Steve, how many selections?
Four!
Very nicely done. Who's the main tip?
Rasmus Højgaard, 12-to-1 is more than fair. Come on. His brother won this event in 2022. Nikolai won this by four shots. Now it looks like it's Rasmus's turn to make merry at the Al Hamra. He's been in determined mood, hasn't he? You must have noticed, since missing out on the Ryder Cup. He was pretty humiliating. He went to the Marco Simone as Thomas Bjorn's buggy driver. He wants a more fulfilling role in the next Ryder Cup, and I think he's going to get it. And he narrowly missed out. He's having near misses, is Rasmus. He narrowly missed out on a PGA Tour card in the Race to Dubai rankings. So he's determined, focused. He's taken these setbacks well. I like the way he speaks in interviews. I like the cut of his jib. He's finished in the top 20 in his last five tournaments. He was sixth in the Nedbank Challenge, 11th in the DP World Tour Championship, 11th again last week in the Dubai Desert Classic. And while his brother Nikolai was putting like an elephant last week and denying us victory there, he really was terrible putting from Nikolai. Rasmus was the complete opposite. I think I've said this before in the Swedes, but they seem to be opposites with the putty. If one putts amazingly well, the other one's terrible. I don't know what it is. But Rasmus was holding everything, real putting confidence he's taken to Ras Al Khaimah. And he was long off the tee, bit erratic. But as I say, this week you can get away with loose driving. Power is much more important. He's got progressive Al Hamra form figures, 42, 36. I see him as by far the most likely winner of this golf tournament, Jack. I mean, you know, Jordan Smith too close to him in the betting for me. Jordan Smith usually so poor in contention. Rasmus is a four-time DP World Tour champion at the age of 22. Smith is 9 years older than Rasmus and has only won twice.
Yeah, again, another player that you just assume is older than he actually is because of his, you know, illustrious record already. Okay, Rasmus Højgaard, 12-1. Who's up next?
Keeping the faith with Laurie Kanter, 30-1. Laurie Kanter. He didn't have that early gallop that I was hoping for last week. Do you remember? He cantered out of the blocks with a pair of 73s and had the weekend off. But you know, maybe I was expecting too much too soon. His first tournament of the year. His driving was typically excellent, but the other departments of his game weren't sharp. You know, Alhambra is a layout where he can set the record straight. He finished 25th in his only previous Ras Al Khaimah start. We know he likes desert golf from fifth spot in the 2020 DP World Tour Championship, fourth place in the 2021 Desert Classic, and his form before Christmas was so eye-catching. Fourth in the Australian Open, second in the Mauritius Open. I think he'll slip back into gear this week. We have to retain faith in Mr. Kanter.
I think so. It's good to keep faith in those people, isn't it, Steve?
Yes.
Laurie Kanter, add it to the list. Who's next?
It is Alejandro Del Rey. 45-1 now is best, I believe. A spectacular driver of the ball. He should be licking his lips at the prospect of tackling Alhambra. Yeah, there's been some early money this week, which is obviously disappointing, but there's still enough juice in the odds to justify this tip. I've had my eye on this lad for a while. Explosive talent, former Arizona State man, and always well up for it. This is what I like most about Alejandro. He's well up for it. You know, he got a real passion for the game. I remember watching the Joburg Open. He missed the cut in the Joburg Open in November and he virtually burst into tears. He knew he had a putt to make the cut and he missed it. He virtually burst into tears on the final green, absolutely crestfallen, just wasn't moving. You know, he probably had to be carried off the green. The cameras cut away, but he's just a broken man from a missed cut in the Joburg Open. And he responded to that setback. So he walked away from that, grinded on the practice ground. The following week, fifth in the South African Open and then seventh in the Alfred Dunhill. So a manful response. Last week, he was going really well in the Dubai Desert Classic on his debut at the Emirates. You know, long established course, massive inexperience handicap. But then a final round 77 dropped him to 38th place. But all the damage was done on the front nine on Sunday. He was actually under par for the back nine. He outscored Rory McIlroy on the back nine by two shots. And then he closed, Del Rey closed with birdies at 17 and 18. So I don't think he left Sunday feeling like, hugely disappointed himself. It was a good effort on a course he didn't really know. This week he comes at a course he has course experience on. He was 28th in this event last year.
Alejandro, I mean, first of all, cracking name. Second of all, clearly a great player as well. Okay, Alejandro Del Rey added to the list. Fourth and final pick, Steve.
Keita Nakajima. Ask me what his name is again. I love that one.
Two great names back to back. Who are we going for again?
Say my name. Keita Nakajima. 35-1. Who might just be so good that he can overcome two significant handicaps this week. He's making his course debut. He's making his first start of the year. Ordinarily, I wouldn't go near a player like that, you know, getting on to the end of June. But I have to make an exception for Nakajima because, you know, this could be like a Group 1 horse in a Group 55 horse race. What's the lowest group you can get? I don't know.
You get sort of class sixes, can't you? That's what I have to watch at Yarmouth, yeah.
Oh, class six.
Class six, flat action.
Oh, well, there you go. This is a Group 1 horse in a class six. And I know you love former world number one amateurs. Nakajima was world number one.
He wasn't another one, was he?
Yeah, for 87 weeks.
How were there that many? How are there that many former world number one amateurs, and they've all been world number one for about 4 years?
I think it's an illusion. I don't think there are as many as you've got it down. I think because I keep throwing them at you, then you haven't balanced the figures. But to 87 ruddy weeks, and he's just broken into the top 100 of the world rankings, you know, professional rankings, after an excellent start to his professional career. He's already won four times on the Japan Tour, as well as finishing runner-up six times. He was fifth in the Australian Open in 2018. He was 12th in the Zozo Championship PGA Tour event in 2022, every non-major test that Nakajima has faced, he's passed with flying colours. Special talent, Japan Tour form figures of 10, 1, 20, 2, 4, 2.
Wow.
I think he just swaggers into Alhambra like he owns the joint. You know, he could produce fireworks. I don't think we can leave him out.
Well, I mean, great arguments for all, Steve. I mean, can all four of them win? I think they can.
Well, I'm not ruling it out. I think there was wasn't there one at Valderrama where Bernard Langer and Colin Montgomery had to share first place because they ran out of light, if I remember right.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't think you were born then, but yeah, Monty and Langer tied first at Valderrama, I'm sure, in the Volvo Masters 1 year.
They sort of had one hand each on the handles.
Yeah. Well, I expect Monty wrestled it off Bernard. But that'd be great, wouldn't it? Yeah, if my four tie for first place. Anything can happen in this game. If you haven't learned that by now, you'll never learn it.
You're an only child, aren't you, Steve?
No.
Are you not? I thought you were an only child.
Fortunately, my sister doesn't watch this. I have an older sister.
The only reason I say that is, you know, you mentioned the Højgaards and obviously uber competitive with each other. Are you like that in certain aspects with your sibling?
Well, it's an interesting one you make there, because my sister did used to be a journalist. She started off as a local reporter, and then obviously I was just much younger and I was thinking that might be my game, sports journalism. But then by the time I got going, she sort of quit that and moved into other more sort of she works at a hospital now. There's no rivalry there professionally anymore. No, there might have been when I started out, but not anymore.
And you said I must talk about Luke Littler as well.
I have a non-golf related tip, if I may. There was a commentator asking for a snooker tip last week, so I don't feel too bad about throwing this in. I know we're all big golf fans, but there's other sports going on that we have to recognise, gridiron, etc. But I'd like to recommend Ronnie O'Sullivan to win the World Snooker Championship in a double with Luke Littler to win the World Darts Championship, and you can get 5-2 about Ronnie O'Sullivan and 9-2 Luke Littler in a double. So that's more than 18-1 for that double. I think it looks a fantastic bet. You know, even Ronnie O'Sullivan admitted on Sunday how well he played. It's very rare that he's always downbeat about his game, but even he admitted he played well on Sunday. And on the Saturday night, he was even better against Dinger and win the semifinal. So O'Sullivan's game is in fantastic order, and he'll have real focus for the World Championship. It's the one tournament that you can guarantee focus from Ronnie O'Sullivan, because he's desperate to set the record for the most World Championship wins. And Luke Littler in the Bahrain Darts Masters last week beat all the best players, beat Gerwyn Price in the semi-finals, beat Marco van Gerwen in the final. He opened up with a 9-darter in his first leg. I mean, talk about handling the pressure of the hype, the hype machine's an overdrive, but rightly so. Go with the hype machine.
I think he's just naive to it all, isn't he? Because the brilliant thing he said was he hasn't picked up his darts since the final of the world, and he's just been playing on his Xbox. What a life.
He's a freak of nature. He's got an amazing temperament. He finished runner-up in the World Championship, puts the darts down, picks them up, throws a 9-darter in the first event back, and then beats all the best players. And he's only going to get better, isn't he? And I think he's going to go off about 7-4 for the World Championship. But yeah, he's going to progress this year. So yeah, I think it's just a joyous bet that, because you've got a snooker player in the twilight of his career. He's 48, is Ronnie, and he's still the best in the business, and he's loving it and finding it hilarious that all these youngsters can't get close to him. And then at the other end of the scale, you've got Luke Littler, who's 16 years, he's nearly 17. I think
he's just turned 17.
He's easy at the other end, and he's the new Phil Taylor. And I just think it's a lovely bet that'll last the whole year for punters. So have some of that as well.
Have some of that indeed. Right, let's recap the 8 selections across the 2 tournaments this week, Steve. We'll start in the Farmers Insurance Open.
Max Homer, good chronological order there. Well done. Max Homer, Colin Morikawa, Sepp Straka, Luke List.
And in the Raz Al Khaimah.
Raz? Mus Højgaard. That's just come to me. Yeah, it's written in the stars, isn't it? Raz wins the Raz. Rasmus Højgaard, Laurie Kanter, Alessandro Del Rey, Keita Nakajima.
I love it. I mean, a good pronged attack in both, Steve. If you're, you know, I don't think the weekend just gone was your favourite, was it? It sounds as if, you know, your temperament was tested. What's this week got in store?
I had a really good time. Yeah, me and Tommy had a great time at Snooker Hall. We got in trouble for the films we watched. I'm in the doghouse with the wife for the films we watched. I don't know how you feel on this, Jack, but we watched Karate Kid 2, Goonies, Happy Gilmore, and Ghostbusters. And then when my darling wife got home, and Tommy Tiger was started talking about the films he watched. Yeah, he's only 4 years old. I just think these certificates are a bit cautious, aren't they? They're all certificate 12, those films, and yeah.
A little bit of, you know, naughty language and such in them, isn't there? But I'm sure Tommy has heard you come out with the odd expletive now and again.
Yeah, but you learn things. Like the Goonies is like a good friendship group, isn't it? Going on a big treasure hunt. Come on, lads. Yeah, good camaraderie there. Happy Gilmore is a fella against all the odds, overcoming his temperament issues to become the best golfer in the world. I think there's enough education in there to balance out the sort of a few swear words here and there. So we had a good weekend.
Good. Well, hopefully this week is even better, Steve. Thank you very much. We've got three tournaments to look forward to next week. And I must say before that, Steve, you don't get to see him. Well, you do, Steve, but the viewers at home don't get to see him. And that's Will. Will, producer Will, has been producing this show since the start, really, and is off for new opportunities. This is the final show he's producing. And with everything across the Racing Post that we make, it's often, you know, the ones on screen that get the plaudits or the hate, whichever you think. But it's always the producers that stick in the hard yards and manage to get these shows out there. If it wasn't for Will, then you wouldn't be seeing any of those. And he's cut out plenty of mistakes over the years, Steve, as well.
Should we let the viewers see him? Come on, Will. Come on up. Come on up. Is that even possible?
I don't think so.
Come on stage.
Maybe we can tweet something after the show. A big thanks to Will, who's done brilliant work on the show over the years. He's off for some new opportunities. Three tournaments next week, Steve. So plenty to get through then. I hope your revision is starting already for those. Any last words?
So it's the return of Liv next week, I believe, yeah?
It's
the return of Liv. Let's pray that Nick Dunlap is not playing in that golf tournament.
That would be a shock if so. Thank you ever so much for watching at home. We'll catch you again next Tuesday for another episode of The Sweet Spot.